that David was not suffering the consequences. Can you see that? Was it fair? Many times you and I would say, not fair. But look, fairness and justice has to be looked at an objective level, not a subjective level. Because some things that we say is not fair, but when you look at the overall plan, there is an action and reaction, and you're right there, in the midst of that, there is the whole justice system that is still working. Because Saul did something, if there's no reaction, then all the laws that God has made are not functioning. For good or for evil, the action of his produced evil. If he did many good things, David would have reaped it. So David here was suffering the consequences or the circumstances of a famine caused by Saul. And he took action in order to remove it. Now there was an Old Testament way of doing it. In the New Testament, that those things won't be done again. But he did something that cancelled those things. That is an example of a cycle that has taken over several decades. Some action and reaction is immediate. But some actions and reactions is measured in decades. Decades. And because our human lifespan is not really that long, if some action and reaction in war 50-year cycle or 100-year cycle, we may not even realize it. We might not even realize that it's tied to those things. Because it's hard to trace in one lifetime. Then there's another area which looks strange here in chapter 24, 2 Samuel. Here David was the one who did the wrong thing. He numbered the Israelites and he angered, and God was upset at him. So there was a judgment that was taking place because of David's action and David's wrong action. And in the end, David fell at the mercy of God, fasted and prayed. And in verse 15, let's look at verse 15. The Lord sent a plague upon Israel from the morning till the appointed time. From then to Beersheba, 70,000 men of the people died. Now that was almost an instant thing that took place. David disobeyed God in his pride, and everyone suffered the consequences. You also see a certain pattern emerge. The higher you are in influence, your one little action can cost the lives of many down your authority. Isn't that terrible? Right. But that's true. Any decision or reaction by one who is above us in influence and authority affects everyone down the line. I mean, for example, if suddenly the leader of the nation says, "Let's go and attack Indonesia," suddenly all of us are affected, right? Just one decision. Of course, he won't do that, but just an illustration of how everything can change because of one decision. So the higher you are in influence, your action and reaction goes further too. And David's wrong error cost 70,000 lives. That's a lot of people. 70,000 people died. But when David acknowledged his sin, and in verse 18, Gad came that day to David and said, "Go up, erect an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Araunah, the Jebusite." At the very place where the plague was stopped, when David begged for God's mercy and forgiveness, and he acknowledged his sin, at the very place, God says, "Build an altar." And here is the interesting thing. At the very place where the plague was stopped, It happened to be the same place where Abraham offered his son Isaac on Mount Moriah. And it's the very place where God chose to build the temple. And it's the very place today which you call the temple site in Jerusalem. It was the exact geographical spot. Question: was that a coincidence? With God, There is no coincidence. Second question. If David did not fall into sin or error, would that place have been revealed? We can only say yes because it seems to be the right answer. Because God cannot be using the wrong things to reveal the right things. So yes, I'm sure God would still reveal the place to build a temple. But then the third question comes. Why did God use that situation to reveal it? Why not he just leave that aside? Why was David at the right place at the right time doing the right thing? When just before he was at the right place doing the wrong thing in the wrong time. Now he's at the right place doing the right thing at the right time. And God says, that's the place I want to build a temple. So our third question stands. Why our God uses the circumstances of our life, even the circumstances of our failure, to reveal some of his plans? And he does. He uses them, incorporates them into his divine revelation of speaking to our lives. Now, that second story of David is this. It's just to let us know that God is in control of many things far more than we realize. We sometimes think God is small. We don't realize how powerful or how omniscient he is. That he has the ability to even see our mistakes before we do it and incorporate a plan that involves our mistakes. And through those things, reveal something beautiful. God is much bigger than that. Now, out of those things, I bring you to this conclusion that God does speak through our circumstances, quote unquote, good or bad, some things are going to come forth out of that. If you remember the law that nothing is by accident, there are no accidents in God. Everything has a cause and an effect. There is no such thing as an accident in God. Everything has a cause and effect. In Proverbs 26 verse 2 it says, like a flitting sparrow, like a flying swallow, so a curse without cause shall not alight. In other words, in some translation it says in verse 2, the curse causeless shall not come. Everything good or bad is caused from something before. If that is so, we are going to find out what all the different causes are that control the circumstances so that we can discern how God speaks to us. Now, as we show you the two laws of all the things that govern circumstances that fall, one is every action and every imagination causes a cycle. And second law, every cycle has a beginning and an end. Sometimes there's a nice end, sometimes there's a reaction to the ending and it produces a second cycle. Which is why the old movie stories of the Avenger would never end. You know why? Because somebody kills somebody, the other guy takes revenge. The other guy takes revenge, kills this guy, and this guy takes revenge, kills the other guy. That guy kills the other guy. And so for generations, it's bounced to and fro. Action and reaction, no ending. Until, in the end, one of the family says, alright, I'll forgive that person who killed so and so. And so forgiveness comes and the cycle ends. So only when good and mercy comes can the cycle of evil stops. There are four different things that would affect circumstances. The first is in the area of yetzer of vision. Turn with me in the book of Genesis. The book of Genesis, and we look at a very, interesting story of Jacob. Now, Jacob was a man who looks like circumstances keep on occurring to him. He seems to be a man of circumstances. Because of action and reaction, he ran away from his home. And he landed up in his uncle's place, Uncle Laban. In chapter 31 of Genesis, he served Uncle Laban, and he was tricked, married the wrong person, and then he worked on for another 7 years, in the end he worked 14 years. 14 years he worked for the two daughters of Laban, 6 years he worked for the flock. But the circumstances were not enough to bring him the blessing that God wanted to bring him. So the Bible tells us that when it was time for him to work for his wages, he wanted all the cattle that were spotted and speckled. So Laban took away, and he quickly took away all the cattle that were spotted and speckled away to a distance, 3 days distance, and he left all the good cattle and sheep with Jacob. So Jacob looks and there was nothing that belonged to him. But an angel of the Lord taught him how to produce spotted and speckled cattle and sheep. In chapter 31, it tells us here, that it says here, verse 10, "It happened at a time when the flocks conceived that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leapt upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and grey spotted. Angel of the Lord spoke in a dream, said, Jacob," he says, here I am. "Lift up your eyes now. All the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, grey spotted, for I've seen all that Laban is doing to you." Now, how that took place besides him seeing it in a dream is found in chapter 30, where in verse 37, Jacob, through the revelation of God, took for himself green poplar, almond, chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them, exposed the white which was in the rods, and he put the rods in front of the animals as they drank water and as they mated. He puts it in front so the animals see these things before the eyes. They see white, black, white, black, white, black, white, black, white, black, white, black, and lo and behold, they give birth white, black, white, black, spotted and speckled. Now, this is in the Bible, so we cannot deny that it took place. Unless you don't believe in the Bible. So, this actually took place and it actually worked. So far, I have known of no farmer who has tested this, right? It'd be interesting to test. Being a scientist, I love to test all these things. But so far, I haven't got any sheep or cattle to test it on. But it would be good to test these things. But we can accept that since it's in the Bible, it occurred and it took place and the sheep all gave black, white, black, white. Question, why did it take place? It has something to do in the realm, something powerful that controls every event and all circumstances. And that is the area of vision. Even a sheep has an inner part of them that controls what is to come. That changes, quote unquote. If, can I be scientific about it? Scientifically, if the sheep produced spotted and speckled, the DNA must have changed, correct? Logically. Since we know today that the color of the sheep, the fur, the size, the eyes, is all controlled by the DNA of the sheep. So, as long as the DNA says produce spotted, the sheep will keep producing spotted. Now, before that, the sheep was white. So we can say that somehow there is a visual part of the sheep that when you see spotted, speckled, spotted, speckled, spotted, speckled, it somehow caused a change in the DNA and it produced spotted and speckled. It may sound too far-fetched for you, but let me remind you that it is scientifically documented that your diet can affect your DNA for the next generation. Your diet and your mental, emotional constant, that means if you maintain that emotional state for a certain level, and your emotional state produces chemicals and hormones in your body, and it is constantly applied, that means for generation after generation, or even within one generation, but for a long time, it produces chemical changes in your body, which can indirectly affect your DNA in your body for the next generation.